You're listening to Go Fish with Mike Buck on AM 690, The Fishing Answer. This segment is being brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at wpcouncil.org. Now, troll on in.
Yeah, and stick pretty close today because we're going to give you a couple of opportunities, particularly those of you that are looking at scholarships and students and the fisheries as maybe something you want to end up in. That's going to be a bonus. We are catching up with yet another one of our council guys. This guy actually is a really quintessential example of what sticking to stuff is going to do for you. We met a while ago when he first got here. He was doing some contract work for the council. Now he can spell it because he's a council. He's worked for the council. Tom Remington joined us and came in as a fisheries analyst. He's now doing some really interesting stuff, including an annual report that we mentioned a few programs ago. What did it entail and what was it for? And more importantly, how's it going to help us fishermen? How are you doing?
Good.
Is that a pretty good introduction?
Yeah, that was pretty spot on. I'm glad to be here. Good to see you again, Mike.
When we met, you were a contracted provider to the council.
That's correct.
And they have several of these, correct?
Yep.
Yeah. And so when that happens, is it for a certain period of time? What was it that made you decide, yeah, I'll take that?
Yeah, it's typically for a certain period of time. And, you know, they had helped me through my graduate degree. I got my master's degree here on Oahu. And so they had given me a project there and helped me. And then afterwards, you know, they wanted to continue the same kind of work. Yeah. So I was the natural selection. And given that I wanted to stay and work on island, it was a good connection.
Now that explains it. So, and I've always loved this, and we'll talk about some of the folks that come from CNMI and from some other far-reaching parts of the council's purview. But where's your? First of all, his name is Remington, and everybody says, okay, you must have lots of guns. Where'd he come from?
I'm originally from the Bay Area, California.
Okay, yeah, yeah. So not too far away from here. What brought you to Hawaii the first time?
So I came to Hawaii for my master's degree. It was in marine science. I'd gotten my bachelor's in San Diego, you know, in love with the ocean. Mm. Not many better spots.
I remember talking to you about that when we met.
Yep.
About the similarities between San Diego and Hawaii. We're really close.
Yeah. And it's actually, I lived with a couple of guys that grew up on Oahu in San Diego when I was in college. Yeah. And it kind of inspired me. They said the same thing and they got me really fired up about coming out here and studying some of the marine science opportunities.
The only thing that I've noticed that's different is, number one, the water's colder.
Okay? Much.
And number two, the sand is different.
It is. It really is.
And I guess there's some scientific way to explain that.
Yeah, there's all sorts of different things with coral reefs that you can explain, but, you know.
But I do know that walking down the beach in San Diego, the last time I was there, it's like lots of rocks. I mean, you know, some of our beaches are like that too. But, and I mean, Waikiki even got like that for
right,
a while.
Right, right.
But most of the time, you know, we're in smooth, you know, snowy
sand. Smooth sand.
You know?
Yep.
And anyway, it's sort of interesting. So you could have done your master's there, right?
Yeah, I had a lot of opportunity there. I was doing a lot of different kind of work, you know, around San Diego. Mm-hmm. But something about Hawaii just seemed like it would be a great place to jump off for these kinds of
fields. What about, and this is the opportunity for those of you that are listening that have either personal desires or family members, we'll talk about that given the time today and the next time, because actually we get to visit with Thomas for two segments, this week and next week. That being said, I mean, obviously, you know, what pointed you at getting a master's, but your title, your official title is fisheries analyst.
Correct.
So obviously that means, and we're going to talk a little bit about the report that comes out. What are these reports? What's in these things anyway?
So yeah, these reports, these are basically snapshots of the year. Mm-hmm. And we understand that it's hard, you know, for a fisherman or just anyone in the public to understand what's going on with the fish or with the fishery in a given year. There's so much going on in terms of different boats, different places, different species. So this is really your one-stop shop to go and learn about what happened in the past year, how are people fishing, what did they make, what are the fish costing, how is the environment doing around that area.
But, you know, the criteria have become interesting to me, because I remember back in the day, we're going to talk about how technology and people that are going to be in compliance with cooperation and sharing information have made these reports pretty valuable tools.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, I think before it was like, oh, maybe this is true, maybe it's not. It was a lot of anecdotal stuff, and I know that you still rely on that.
The
anecdotal stuff. You know?
Yeah, there's a lot of, I don't want to say guesswork, but there's a lot of extrapolations made, and, you know, it's it was a long turnaround too, you know, because we had to gather all this data and technology wasn't quite up to par in, you know, a decade ago. So.
Even this, I remember somebody told me, and I think the word, it was called GIGO, and I remember that, G-I-G-O, garbage in, garbage out.
Exactly.
And so, you know, there used to be a lot of garbage going into these things.
Absolutely.
And so... So the use of them later was pretty skeptical because, you know, this may not be accurate. With the scientific way you gather and stock assessments and the stuff that you can talk to, the anecdotal stuff, I reckon it's getting a lot more accurate.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you had mentioned technology and just that in and of itself. You know, a couple of years ago, it would take a few years to turn around one of these reports. So people couldn't even look back and see, hey, what happened in the past year until years after.
My tax guy showed me this really cool thing. It's like a little wand that you plug into your computer and you put all your receipts through it.
Oh, yeah.
Or whatever. Yep. And it goes to where it's supposed to go to.
Yep.
And, you know, that alone is worth the price of admission. So what you're talking about here is being able to have, okay, we need a report on this and this is how we're going to get it. The more accurate going in, the more accurate going out. But still, I think that a lot of fishermen, you correct me if I'm wrong, weren't really willing to collaborate in the past because they looked at, uh-oh, here comes the government to get in my face and tell me not to catch fish.
Right, right. You know,
or limit me.
Yeah, there's that negative kind of connotation surrounding it that like, oh, I'm giving up my information, you know, maybe they're going to slap me on the wrist, maybe I'm giving up my fishing spot, maybe I'm giving up, you know, valuable information that I don't trust them with.
Mm-hmm.
But the case is the better information that we have, the better management that we can make.
Sure.
A great example is the bottom fish assessment around here.
I knew that was going to come, and I'll tell you why. First of all, they had arbitrary opens and closures. And I do know a lot of these guys that are bottom fishermen. And you even can explain maybe the new way you do their stock assessment, because that's changed a lot. But they were so skeptical. And what happened is the report came out and their limits were actually increased.
Their limits were increased. Yeah. So what happened was the previous stock assessment was using data only from the fishery-dependent data. So they're only looking at stuff that people are catching and saying, this is what we're using to know what's out there.
Mm-hmm.
So in this newer stock assessment, and back in 2018, just last year, they had fishery-independent data. So they had people doing surveys on, you know, what might be out there independent of what fishers are catching.
Right.
And it told them that, hey, the biomass, the amount of fish out there is way higher than we thought. Mm-hmm. So instead of fishers catching bottom fish every year and bumping up against their catch limit, the catch limit might actually be able to be a lot higher and kind of give them some breathing room so they're not always up against regulations and fishery closures.
Yeah, and interesting, that's happening right now.
That's happening now.
And the good part about that is it doesn't mean it's open sesame and let's go get it.
Right.
But it does show when there is going to be a concern, how you can determine that. And that's what I'm trying to get at. If you're allowing somebody to catch 40,000 pounds of something, and this happens for a couple of years and then they don't, that must mean that, hey, wait a minute, maybe we're catching too many than we should.
Right, right.
Or maybe we're not catching enough, tell me, you know?
Yeah, so it's hard because you have these, you're trying to model into the future, but then you're also checking your model each year as it goes along. Are our expectations, is the reality lining up with them? So, you know, we'll see how it plays out and, you know, if our optimistic stock assessment plays out.
Well, let's talk about that in many respects. I do know that bottom fishing became a real issue as far as the commercial guys being able to make money. And then they were also concerned that there were very similar species being brought into Hawaii from other places cheaper. So that why buy a local guy's onaga when you can buy a import guy's onaga for half?
Yeah.
But then the discerning buyer or the eater saying, really? I'm going to pay the extra because I want the one caught here. I want the fresh
one. True. It's a huge wave. And, you know, socially, people are looking to buy in their geo region, right?
Okay, now when that happens, when you say the stock assessments are different, when you talked about what's out there, was most of it before determined on what went through the auction rather than other ways of collecting data?
So yeah, commercial marine licenses was the basis for these data, so logbooks CMLs, and things like that, CMLs.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the basis for the data. Obviously, like you said, you know, we gather data from as many different streams as possible. Now, I wasn't involved in the bottom fish stock assessment. I only know it from an adjacent standpoint, but you're just aggregating as much data as possible, be it from the fisherman or from, you know, other sources, anecdotal sources even can help in certain circumstances.
Sure.
But you want to be able to point to, you know, strong science as well, which is what this last assessment did really well in 2018.
I'm particularly blown away by the deployment of certain of cameras, of a lot of things that help, and some of the actually groundbreaking stuff that must be really good because, from what I understand, some of the practices that you all are developing here are being used now in other at other consoles because of the maybe because we are more discerning. I don't mean discerning here, but more demanding of fresh fish.
Perhaps. I mean, fish is more more a part of the integrated culture here more than anything else. You know, it's just it's, not an expectation, but it's almost seen as a right.
I guess so, and that means that because if you're landlocked in Des Moines or something, you can't decide to go down and jump in the water and spear some mempachi. You have to buy them.
Right, right.
You know, but still, what is the end user of the report always gets to me, because I remember talking once to you guys a long time ago, the movie Raiders of the Lost Ark, where they put the ark in this warehouse later.
Right, right.
And it's stored with all kinds of other stuff, and who knows what it is. So we don't want these studies to get, okay, that was a great job. It kept Thomas busy for a year. Now let's put it on the shelf and do a new one.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. Actually, that's a great point. Thank you for bringing that up. So I worked on the report for half a year, and then it was sort of like, we're done.
Yeah.
We have a giant file now.
Yeah.
What do we do
with
this?
What are we going to do with it? That's it. Yeah.
So we kind of came to the decision that, you know, people can access this this file if they want.
And at wpcouncil.org.
At wpcouncil.org. Yeah,
I want you all to know that this is a user-friendly website. You type in a search word, you find out right away. But more fun is just something to do every now and again. I try to check in once or twice a week just to see what's up. And you will be amazed, first of all, at the attention that's now being paid to the pension to the website. It's better.
Oh, yeah. It's getting updated at this moment.
It's a huge source of information.
Huge source. So, yeah. So the annual reports for 2018 are up there currently. And you can go check out what happened in the fisheries around the Western Pacific for then.
Okay, differentiate what when you say the reports, how is it broken down by species, by pelagics, by inf- how?
So yeah, so just the two main things are the pelagic report and the archipelagic reports. Mm-hmm. So we have the pelagic report, and that's all the stuff, you know, out there on the sea, the pelagics. Yeah. But then we also have the archipelagic reports that cover all the jurisdiction of the council, right? So that's Hawaii, the Marianas, Guam, and American Samoa.
Okay, now gang, when you talk about pelagics, it's not just the four or five flagfish that are caught in tournaments. As you know, we've been spending a lot of time with Mark Fitchett and others talking about opa, talking about munchong, talking about other fish that you don't really think about as pelagic since they're not surface-running game fish.
Right, right.
But we still love to catch them when we can.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, there's a whole slew of... that's why pelagics gets its own report, because there's such a wide range of species. I mean, not to say there isn't on the reefs and stuff like that, but... pelagics definitely is the moneymaker for a lot of fishermen.
There's also another thing to make sure that you can differentiate as a listener. There's a tremendous amount of interaction between the DLNR by the state and the council. There's this line of demarcation that says this is council water and this is state water. But the problem is the fish is not certain what part of the water they're in, right?
No, the fish don't obey arbitrary line. So we have stocks that they straddle both sides of the line, right? Mm-hmm. So we work closely with the state and, you know, with the federal agencies being where we are kind of positioned in the middle. So technology has actually helped even in that sense, communication-wise, and transferring these kinds of data.
I learned something really cool a few years ago from some friends at South Point, where they do this trash bag fishing. Hmm. Okay, so they take a big garbage bag, and they fill it with air, and they tie it.
Yeah.
And then they tie their bait on that, and they let it out, you know, a couple of hundred yards.
Yeah.
And they catch marlin, and they catch tuna, and they catch thing. And these are, it's not inshore because the water is very deep very quickly on that part of the Big Island. But it does show you that you don't have to go 20 out to catch a marlin. They're right there.
Yeah, they're right there. Yeah. It's especially around here, you know, the drop-off is very quick.
The reason why it's called trash bag is because it's usually onshore winds. I mean, off. So offshore. What happens is you put your bait in the water and free spool it, and that big trash bag blows out to sea. And takes your line with it and gets way out there.
Right,
now
right.
You got to stand. When you get a bite, you got to fight the trash bag to bring it in. but isn't that sort of interesting? Because that's the sort of statistic that will impact two reports: the inshore report and the offshore.
Absolutely,
report.
Yeah. So I mean, just even those kinds of the situations make things difficult, but. And, you know, having five reports to choose from isn't the most user-friendly thing in the world. So when people go online, oh, where am I looking for what information? So I did want to mention something that we did this past year to kind of help alleviate that pressure for our end user is we made a data portal a much easier way to access this stuff online. So you can go in, you can kind of see a chart and a table right with the numbers right in front of you. You don't have to dig through text. And you can download that data if you want. So,
by the way, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because let me tell you something. When I first started doing this, most of us didn't have the capacity in our home, in our software, or in our computers to really do this, because some of these are huge files. And that's no longer an issue. For some reason, the current generation, like you guys, you don't understand. We were severely limited by storage before. So if you really wanted something, you had to delete something else. You know, I mean, we get
exactly
that. Here in the radio station, I have maybe 2,000 hours of programs. Mm. And it used to be, it slowed down the computer, slowed down the system. Now who cares? They say, don't you want, I feel guilty. I got, you know, all of these things out there. They'll never be used again. You just have to get you. But that must mean the same thing. That
absolutely.
Once you understand what's out there, to get it, to drag it down, I'm talking about teachers, people that are looking at creating, maybe investing in a fishing boat and deciding, okay, if I'm going to do this, you know, who am I going to hire and where they're going to go? What's a reasonable expectation of the catch and all that stuff?
Even if, even fishers that are curious or people that are interested in conservation and are interested in just the ocean in general, it's great to look at different species and see how's this going over time? Like, what's happening? You know, it's right there at your fingertips. You can access it whenever you like. And it's just a lot of great information and it's all, you know, it's relevant. It's local.
Yeah. And there's another thing too. And I know that the boo birds are out flying around on some of the stuff. But what I'm talking about is, if you take a look at cost for return, this isn't, you guys aren't just spinning your wheels. And they're not doing these things, creating these things. Like, go back to when you were a contracted guy, that they didn't say, well, just, you're a nice guy, we're going to pay you, come in here and just fool around. There was you know, an end game for these reports. So that's,
right.
Let's talk about that right now, because when you say you put one to bed, you start the next one up right away.
Essentially, I mean, you know, because we're able to turn them around in about 6 months now, as opposed to a couple of years, as opposed to a couple of years.
How does that help those that are in the fishery understand? Because if you give me a report that's 5 years old, I'm not interested.
Exactly. You know, so that's one of the main things is like we need, you know, support from the fishers in order for them. Yeah. They need to give us their information so we can give them good summaries, right? So if we're giving them their summaries 5 years later when they don't really care, if it's not really relevant, then what are the fishers getting out of giving us any sort of support? So, you know, by, you know, kind of buckling down and really turning this around in 6 months, giving them the information they want to see from just, you know, a few months ago, I think it's really bumped up the importance of it.
Let me ask you this, because this may help those of you that are out there that are given the opportunity or that sees the opportunity to be a part of the information gathering. A lot of stuff that a lot of people don't understand that you guys have to work with all the time is what they call effort and catch and what constitutes what part of the fishing trip should be assignable to that fish that you caught. Because
right.
if you want to travel 50 miles from the boat ramp to your spot, if there's a place that's 16 miles away closer, at what point in time does it make sense for you, the fisherman, to not go from the far point to do the extra, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Learn what you're doing.
Can give insight into trends, you know, so, you know, monchong are trending up this year, you know, or last year, whatever, and price or revenue and revenue per effort and stuff like that. Just simple statistics that can give people just a better understanding of what's happening.
I don't know if any of these, all of these reports are what they are. And we'll ask Tom Remington to explain a little bit about what constitutes just compiling the information and then interpreting it. But I do know that there's a lot of people that are looking at these things and saying, okay, how are we going to be affected by our lack of ability to sell, marlin on the mainland? And that means that there's going to be people still going to catch that marlin. It's going to be here. Mm-hmm. That means that the price here is going to go down because there's going to be more sold.
Potentially.
Yeah. And so, however, that should be augmented by, all right, it may be, but you should still buy it because it's a great source of protein and it's going to be cheap because the stock assessments are good. We can catch plenty of these.
Yeah, but there's so many considerations, right? You have to think about the human side of it. Are fishers going to want to go seeking out those billfish when they can't export them? Yeah. So is there going to be as much of a supply and is the demand going to go up and down? You know, the public at large isn't aware that we can't sell the billfish to the mainland anymore. But
you know, the thing that a lot of people don't understand is if you are no longer an apex predator on these fish, if you're not out there catching them, are they going to start eating more of the fish that we want to eat because there's more of them and they're hungry?
Yeah, and that's where there's so many different aspects to it. And so just a simple thing like saying that you can't export these fish anymore might have a major impact down the line.
How do some of these reports able to factor in things like climatic change and rising temperature? And I'm not talking about just the fish stock. I'm talking about all the other variables.
Right. So we break these reports into chapters. The first chapter focuses on the fish. Mm-hmm. The second chapter really focuses on the ecosystem. So we realize that the fish are a part of the ecosystem, mm-hmm. but there's other parts that kind of impact, you know, what might happen. Yeah, it's not just humans, is what I'm saying. So there's so many other things that can happen in terms of weather events, different sort of habitats, and just things like that.
Okay, well, there's a couple of other things. This comes up every time, and that is, and particularly when we talk to some of the folks that are involved in the fishery for a long period, it is more than anecdotal evidence now suggests that the main Hawaiian islands have an indigenous population of yellowfin tuna. Mm. And now they're thinking, well, maybe there's also some big eye. And, maybe there's this and that. How does that impact, when you talk about stock assessments, what's considered domestic, local, or what's migratory?
Right. So that's like another thing to throw in the pile, right? It's just another thing to consider. But with the improving technology around genetics and things like that, we're able to discern populations and understand that maybe the Hawaiian Islands have an endemic, you know, local population. Yeah. So if, you know, we can keep our stocks healthy here, if we can, you know, make sure that our fishermen here are doing their part, then we can ensure that we will have a stock going forward.
Here's the $64,000 million question.
What's that?
The population of us keeps growing.
Right.
Okay, now we're at 1.3, 1.4 million.
Yeah, huge.
Now, that doesn't mean that the fish are keeping up with our growth. They're not growing at the same rate we are.
Probably going the other way.
I was
going
to say, so that means that at some point in time, a lot of this information that we're providing, that you're providing, that once you start using it as a tool, you know to whether you should be for or against aquaculture. You know whether, you know, isn't that going to be something that we need to look at? Because if we want to keep eating fish and we keep growing in our numbers and the fish aren't growing, guess what? Fish are going to be a lot more expensive and a lot fewer of them to eat.
And, you know, the great thing about the annual reports is, like, they can give insight into those kinds of issues. Mm-hmm. If you can just look at the data, right? Yeah. We don't necessarily tell people, hey, you need aquaculture now, but, like, look at this data and, you know, consider aquaculture as an option. You know, it's we put the wide range of options, but it's up to the people to decide what's the data showing them.
We have to make sure that our fishermen, that you folks are out there that are fishers, are commercial or non-commercial, realize that these aqua guys are not your enemies. You shouldn't be them and us. And the only thing that I think is holding back that a lot is the method of growing them and what you're feeding them. And there's still a lot of concern out there. What does all of that feed to the environment where they're all? So I'm not sure that any of this stuff is valuable for somebody that wants to get into that. But sooner or later, just the stock assessments from year to year to year and the timely way you put them out is going to say, hey, look, this species in this place is declining.
Or, you know, like bottom fish, or the opposite.
Or growing,
So, you know, it's not always that we're taking away catch limit from people, you know. So we can, it's just about management. Yeah. It's not, you know, Big Brother putting his thumb down, so.
You know, when we had Molly Leskovich and Mark Fitchett in and some other stuff last time, we were talking about how interesting it is how, when we talked about the fish don't know whether they're inshore or offshore, how about when they go these thousands of miles? It's just mind-blowing.
It is mind-boggling even to me that we can find out that a fish knows to go from one side of the Pacific Ocean to the other. Yeah, yeah. And then what does that mean for our stock assessments when we divide the Pacific Ocean in half and things like
and
that?
Yeah, and if you're doing a stock assessment, say, in January in Oahu, and you're doing one in June in Fiji, what if this fish went from here and got counted over there? In other words, it's a lot smaller world than we think, isn't it?
Well, yeah. So that's another place where technology steps in, is that we are able to communicate these kinds of changes, even, you know, internationally. Because we have, I don't know if you know this, and even last December, just a couple months ago, there's the WCPFC in Honolulu, which is Western Pacific Fisheries Commission.
There's a lot of confusion on that. A lot of people think it's the council.
It's the council, but it's not. It's actually this international meeting of, you know, 20-some-odd countries that are talking about different fisheries issues in the Pacific Ocean.
Can you imagine, as a scientist, can you imagine how difficult it is to have these 28 people or countries meeting and agreeing on anything?
I mean, they
have to have some really good data, don't they?
It is anxiety-inducing, to say the least, you know, because it becomes a lot about politics, right? Not just about the numbers. It becomes about people's feelings and, you know, things of that nature.
As an example, there was an occasion a couple of years ago where some people were thinking that our longline fleet that was taking the catches from other areas, was diminishing that area's ability to feed themselves. Turns out to be just the opposite. That, you know, we were able to, the longline fleet was able to purchase some of these rights, and then the money would go into increasing the fishery where they were for a different species.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's like, well, if they have unused portions of their catch limits, then why not you know, purchase those, give them money that they can use if they're not going to catch that fish, and then everyone wins.
But let's talk about what that means as far as effort. Because one of the things that maybe people don't understand, and I'm just getting comfortable with this whole effort thing in the first place. If you are going to another area to catch fish off somebody else's quota, that must mean that you have reasonable expectation of being able to make money. That means you have to travel a long distance. That means you have to have your really good ice making capacity. You know, you got to be able to do something, because just because you can catch my fish doesn't mean you're gonna.
Right.
You know,
right.
How long it takes to get there and how long it takes to get back.
Something a lot of people don't think about. And I mean, I didn't even think about it when I was first entering the marine science field. You know, it's kind of not intuitive, but you know, if I catch 10 fish day one and I catch 10 fish day two, but day two I fish 10 hours more.
Yeah.
It's not as efficient, right? It's not quite this, you know, something's different there. Even though I caught the same amount of fish, I put in a lot more effort the second day. So we measure effort by like things like hours fished, hooks set, number of trips done.
Yeah. Because sometimes it's not fair to assign a number to something if it is an elective decision that you made rather than a scientific one.
Right. So it's like, think about...
Does that make sense?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So it's this guy fishes and he caught 200,000 pounds of something over the course of a year, but the amount of effort he put in was relative, was equal, you know? He fished for hundreds of thousands of hours as well. Then I was like, okay, that makes sense.
Well, if you know, a lot of people think, oh, the guy's making so much money, catches so much fish. If you go down to the auction or most fishermen's garage, you're not going to find Mercedes and you know, Alfa Romeo trailers. You're going to find just hardworking people that have chosen that as a lifestyle. What about the joy? Explain that a little bit. You know, when you put a report to bed and put it on the shelf, when you're done with it, what sort of reaction, how quickly do you get either a thanks a lot for this report, or wow, we didn't know this, or, you know, this is going to help us making a decision? Isn't that what it's about?
Well, it is. Yeah. It's a big sigh of relief first, but then, you know, I'd actually wish for more reaction like that, which is why we're trying to make it more transparent and kind of get it out there to be more accessible, because, you know, it can just pass over for a lot of people and just, you know, be the council checking a box.
But it's not what we want it to be. That's really, really important. The council under mandate, and there's, you know, we happen to be the most square miles of all the councils. As a matter of fact, combined, really, it really is
a massive area.
Yeah, massive. You don't just crank this stuff out and then say, we've done our job. I mean, from what I understand, there are constant critiques over and over again, just to make sure that our number one, do we need these reports? And number two, if they're not accurate, how do we make them more accurate?
Right. I mean, it took, you know, years of deliberation even to get these reports to be a thing, right? Yeah. Do we need them? Do we need to put in this amount of effort every year to ensure that we have them? And then afterwards, it goes through multiple layers of committees and scientists to ensure that, you know, these are accurate and these are good to produce.
Yeah. So, one of the things that our lawmakers in Washington, D.C. are not fisheries experts. So they rely on them. And sometimes, and I know you've heard this said before, I do this in my regular program all the time, our legislators are attempting to do the right thing, but they make a decision based on the information they get.
Absolutely.
The more accurate the information, the more likely it's going to be a good decision.
Like you said before, you know, good data in, then good data out. So if we get good information from the fishers, then it's just that much more likely than the management decisions are going to be proper.
So
they're
going
to be appropriate.
So here comes for you listening, and it doesn't matter where you are, if you're listening online or if you're listening on the either on the internet, terrestrial, or you got an app for us or whatever it is. If you see a bill, and once again, I'm getting almost at this time of the year, daily communications from Roy Morioka and many, many others about all these things. If you go to your state legislature and you take a look at the bills by keywords, and if you go to the national, to the Senate and to the House, you find things that you can say, hey, my rep or my guy should know that I like this because. And that's where this information at bcouncil.org is valuable.
Absolutely. And that's what, you know, we try to keep people informed as much as possible, things like that, news, happenings, reports, bills. Definitely, especially with the update, be sure to check it out, wpcouncil.org.
I love that.
And also, the portal that I'd mentioned earlier for the annual reports, if you want to easily just look at the fishery data, it's wpcouncildata.org.
Aha. Oh, see, I just learned something. I'm going to add that to my...
Yeah.
I'm a creature of habit. I mean, I like, say, Craigslist. The whole concept of Craigslist is fine, but I only look at boats, you know, and it's the same thing. When I go to the council now, I'm finding myself, wait a minute, I came here to find this, but look at this over here. It's pretty cool. So what's happening is either somebody's spending a lot more hours or something.
Oh, we're spending a lot of time on it.
It's getting really, really good. And so, gang, and let me also give you a little quiz, a little heads up before we finish this this visit with Thomas. Those of you that are teachers or teachers' aides, you can hit a home run by going to the WPCouncil.org and look at all the things right now that are just fun. I mean, let's digress for a minute. There's some coloring books right now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just like, holy smokes, the materials are right there. And most of them are without cost. Most of them
absolutely
get stuff, you know?
Yeah, we're just, you know, a big facet of what we do is education and outreach. Mm-hmm. We want people to know what it is the council does and that it's not just, you know, like we said, the boogeyman.
Okay, when we come back next week, I hope that we're going to be able to talk about some of the opportunities that are going on. I know there's some deadlines that are looming. We might make mention of that right now. There's some scholarships that are available. Deadlines we're working with, right?
Yep, there is a scholarship available. Yeah. We'll talk about it a little bit more next week, I think. But the deadline is March 1st. If you want more information about that, it is available on the council's website.
Yeah, I have a press release, which people are going to be hearing on my regular show during the week. But for this episode, let's make sure that we sort of school it out. I mean, not school it out, scoped it out a little bit. For the reports we're talking about, there are actually two of them. The pelagic reports.
There's the pelagic report, and there's the four archipelagic reports, one for each region, like I had said. So all because we have a lot of area, right? Yeah. So
when you go to wpcouncil.org and land on one of these, what sort of time should you allot to be able to sort of read through it and take a look at it and figure it out?
I mean, if you want to read through the entire report, that's going to take you a long time. So I assume that most people
I want the crib notes. You know?
Yeah. I assume people are going there and want just to find a certain thing, which is why I recommend the portal for that if you're looking for one specific little piece of data. But otherwise, I recommend going to the reports. You can read the executive summary at the beginning. It's a page or two. It'll give you a general idea of what's inside, and then you can kind of parse out if you want something more specific.
Okay, Tom Remington, thanks for joining us. See you next week.
Happy to be here. Okay. Thank you.
All right. And when we come back, next week we'll talk about these scholarships and maybe how you can get hooked up. Thanks in advance for all of the before stuff, Uncle Roy. Thanks for all the information for this week. And remember, if you want to hear something on the program, all you got to do is drop me a line, themikebuckshow@gmail.com. themikebuckshow@gmail.com. And make sure to even follow me on Twitter at The Mike Buck Show. Right? It's and by the way, drop us a line. Actually, it's email's the best. TheMikeBuckShow@gmail.com. Have a great catch over this President's Day weekend. We'll see you next time.